Good evening. Welcome to the special meeting of Capistrano School District. Board of Trustees, February 25th. The meeting's called to order. And Mr. Maddox, could you lead us in the pledge, please?
Please join us to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a motion to adopt the agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes 7-0. I'm sorry, 5. Roll call, please, Ms. Bowes.
President Addy is here.
Here.
Trustee Winston. Trustee Christensen.
Here.
Trustee Britt.
Here.
Trustee Bryson. Trustee Maddox.
Here.
Trustee Alessa.
Here. Thank you. We move now to our number one item, the budget study session. Mr. Lebs, you're on.
Thank you very much, Madam President, members of the board and audience. We're very pleased to have with us tonight two members from outside of the district that they're going to be presenting some information up front on the state budget, and that's Dr. Wendy Binkert from the County Office of Education and Joel Montero from FICMAT. And Wendy graciously offered to bring Joel down to kind of help give an outside perspective on where the state budget is. So I think it'll be helpful as we go into more specifics later on and on my presentation. But so what I'd like to do now is to turn it over to Wendy, and she can give you a little bit more information on Joel, and then he can get started on his presentation.
Thank you, Ron. It's my pleasure to be here tonight and to be able to introduce Joel. I wanted to first tell you a little bit about FICMAT. FICMAT provides many services to school districts and county offices regarding oversight for school districts, for management assistance, quite a bit of that, professional development, the CSIS, California School Information Systems, and the Ed Data website. Joel himself has over 30 years experience, with the last 8 at FICMAC. He has his master's in educational administration and a BS in design engineering. Joel has held many roles in school districts. He's been a superintendent, an assistant superintendent of business services, curriculum instruction, and human resources, and also a teacher at community college level. He's also been a teacher and a principal, and so he's held many roles within a school district, so he really understands how school districts operate. He's also been a fiscal advisor to a number of districts where he's been responsible for oversight and collaboration with districts and county offices of education, very instrumental in developing school district recovery plans when they've had fiscal distress, and also implementation of comprehensive reviews of school districts. Joel is also truly committed to professional development for school districts and county offices. I've worked with Joel in a number of years on the California Mentor Project for training assistant superintendents of business. Joel is also the first person that I call to help districts maintain their fiscal solvency. He's been very helpful to me in the years I've been in Orange County. When districts are experiencing difficulty financially, he's the first person I call for assistance in that regard. So I've asked Joel to speak tonight to explain from a FICMAT's global perspective the California fiscal crisis and how devastating it is to school districts, and not just in Orange County, but throughout the state. And so with that, I will turn it over to Joel. Thanks, Joel.
Thanks. Thank you, Wendy. And good evening to all of you. I spend a lot of time these days rolling around the state of California having similar sorts of conversations that I assume that we're going to have tonight and that you will have eventually over these next months with your community. We have a statewide issue, obviously, related to education and how things develop. I'd like to say that we're at the bottom of the trough, as it were, in terms of funding at the state level, and that we're looking at what we're looking at now in terms of the state's budget is exactly what it's going to be as we move forward. But I'm not so sure that that's the case, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. What I would say to you is, in addition to that other stuff that Wendy mentioned, I've been a board member, school board member as well, in my children's own school district, and the decisions that you have to make or will have to make over these next months are going to be very difficult, as you know, very, very difficult. I was a superintendent, or excuse me, I was a board member when we had, in my district, very small district, similar kinds of issues, and probably, even though I was a board member for a very short time, was the longest year or two of my life. So God bless all of you. I know your work is going to be difficult, but that's why you're there, and it's the work that has to be done. You have information in front of you, so let me just spend a little bit of time, and I won't try to linger too long on any one of these slides. Or any of this information, but just to give you some background, obviously we're in an economic crisis in the state of California, in the nation actually, in a recessive economy, and actually a global or worldwide issue that continues. There's a lot of issues and a lot of situations that contribute to that. Obviously, we don't need to talk about those necessarily this evening, because I think everybody agrees at this particular point. Everyone understands that the nation is in an economic downturn at some level. Some would argue an economic free fall. California is not much different. We have a multitude of issues, both on the revenue side and the expense side of our budget, that will continue over the next several years. And so part of my message always in this sort of situation, in this environment, is to make sure that everybody understands that this is a multi-year issue. You know, in Wendy's work, her job, the law says that Wendy has to look at school district budgets for the current plus 2 years. Well, the current plus the next 2 years are probably just the small kernel of the issue that we're probably in at the moment. We're recommending that folks begin to look at 5 years and beyond, and probably 10 years to full recovery, depending upon what happens. And I will be the first one to tell you, I'm going to make a lot of statements tonight about the budget and what I think is going to happen, but I will be the first to admit, my crystal ball, no more clear than a lot of other people's crystal ball. And so some of what is going on currently in the budget as it's been enacted, we know about, but some of what's going to happen in the future, we simply just don't know. And it becomes a waiting game. We do know that there's a structural deficit. And if you have been monitoring that over time, and we'll look at a slide of that in a second, you'll notice that it is, there are two significant issues related to that deficit. It's large at the moment, somewhere around $42 billion, $41.8 billion and change, and it's continuing to grow. It continues to grow every single day. If you are in Sacramento and you walk by the governor's office, there's a little ticker outside the door that monitors that deficit. It is related primarily to an unbalanced budget at the state level. It is a structural deficit running through the state's budget, and that is that the state is spending more than they take in, and have been doing that for at least 5 out of the last 7 years. And even in the budget that we currently have, it's not a balanced budget. It continues to be a deficit budget. So that structural deficit continues to grow for us, and we're estimating at this particular point, while it's sitting at about $42 billion today, we think that at June 30, 2009, it probably grows to somewhere in the neighborhood of about $50 billion, notwithstanding all of the things that are going on within the federal stimulus package, tax cuts, and everything else. Those have not been factored in. So we're hoping that that has some impact and provides us some relief as we move down the line. The state revenues, the part of the problem that we have with this, and one of the things that you'll hear me say a few times this evening, is that we now have a budget. It's an 18-month budget. That's what we call it, an 18-month budget. In reality, it's actually a 16-month budget. It's for the rest of this year, current year, 2008-09, and for 2009-10. So it's a budget approval process that actually crosses fiscal years, this fiscal year, next fiscal year. That's unprecedented in California. We don't generally do it like that, but these are extraordinary times. The problem is that the budget now that we have in California is based on not only our expenses in the state, which we can estimate fairly accurately, actually very accurately, and revenue projections, not only in the current but the subsequent year. We have a very difficult time projecting or predicting what those revenues are going to be. And so the budget's been built on some assumptions that may or may not be correct. One of the assumptions that it's built on is that there is going to be securitization in the lottery. So as there's a proposition that will come before the voters, people will vote, the lottery in effect will be sold, and then that will create a revenue stream back to the state, approximately $5.7 or $8 billion. Well, that may or may not happen, but this budget is built on that particular assumption. It's built on an assumption that there will be growth, general growth in the economy. Well, right now, we have no growth in the economy. The state has missed in its projection of both income tax and corporate tax over the last year. In every quarter has missed projections significantly. They projected more than they've actually received, and so that continues. At the same time, the most important tax to us, the one that we watch most closely, and the one that I always suggest that people in communities watch most closely, is sales and use tax. Sales and use tax is a very, very important tax for Californians and for other states in the nation. And the reason that it's so important, and that one, by the way, also has not made projection for any of the quarters in the last actually 18 months. But the reason that it's so important is because it's an indication of consumer confidence. And what we have is a consumer confidence issue related to our economy. Until that turns around, we will continue to have that sort of problem. Again, it's a multi-year problem, and education significantly impacted all over the state. Meetings like this are happening all throughout California in a variety of districts, suburban, urban, rural, large districts such as yours, very, very small, tiny districts, particularly up in the North Coast, districts that are gaining in enrollment, and you have that advantage, by the way, that you're not declining significantly in enrollment. I think your assistant superintendent for business is projecting at least flat enrollment growth over the next school year, fiscal year, at a time where California is actually declining enrollment, is a declining enrollment state. More than half the districts in the state are declining in enrollment. Two-thirds of the counties in the state have districts, for the most part, that are declining in enrollment. This next slide, just very quickly, it shows you, there's two significant things about this slide. Number one, that is the depth of the dollars. $4.6 billion is a lot of money in anyone's estimation. But the thing that's more important about this slide is the compression of the time. This starts in July, basically 2007, and goes till December 2008. It hasn't been updated for 2009 yet. But if it was, you would see that that 41.6 is sitting now almost at $43 billion, and that in a very short time, the state's deficit has grown exponentially. And it's grown exponentially because the economy has gone south. We're in a recessive economy. People are not spending. We have unemployment currently at around 9% plus. It will grow likely to 10% before quarter two of 2009. We have a reduction in corporate tax and certainly a reduction also overall in income tax. But we do have a budget. And the budget is developed and has been developed based on this next slide, and it gives you a sense of how the deal was made. And it's made with what we call basically three legs of a three-legged stool. One of them is in expense reductions. A second is in revenue increase. And the third is in borrowing. The borrowing leg of the stool, probably the one that should be for all of us of greatest level of concern, because the state already has a fairly significant debt service obligation based on a proposition that we all passed two or three years ago that was allowed the state to borrow or sell bonds for about $13 billion. So we're paying on that debt already. This is debt in addition to that debt, as a matter of fact. So you can see there that about 37% of it's coming from expenditure reductions, 31% from new taxes and fees, and there are a variety of those. And then we have borrowing. Before the budget deal was made, this borrowing line was about $11 billion, and it was all going to come out of borrowing. And since then, of course, we have the federal stimulus money. So you can see that this particular budget expects to scrape off of the federal stimulus money that comes to California somewhere around $7.9 billion. We estimate that the total of the federal stimulus package for California is just under $12 billion, so $11 billion and change. So you can see that a good portion of it there is going to be scraped off basically to help support cash flow at the state level, which we're going to talk more about in a few minutes, rather than coming to the district. So the point there is, if you were expecting that the federal stimulus money that's coming to the state of California was going to find its way to all school districts throughout the state at a 100% level, or even at a 75% level, or choose another number, that's not likely the case. The other issue, of course, related to that is the one that I brought up earlier. Remember that this budget is based on some revenue projections that are somewhat fluffy. That's probably the best thing that we can say about them. And my sense would be that if those don't materialize, that the only option the state really has is to go deeper into the stimulus money budget to make up that difference, whatever it might be in the future. So what does it look like year to year? And this is pretty hot off the press. These decisions were finally made only last Friday, and the actual language of these bills is still being written. Even though the bill has been signed, many trailer bills now that are continuing, some of them that will clean up some of the language, some of them for other purposes. But basically, and of course we've been saying this for the last 6 months or so, if you were depending upon spending that .68 COLA that you received in September, remember when the state's budget was balanced, it's not coming. So that's an elimination in the state's budget, and we have estimated that that's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $41 per enrolled student for you, $247 million total. The budget on the expense side is balanced to make up the rest of that 37% is balanced between your revenue limit. Capistrano, of course, as you know, is a revenue limit district, and targeted cuts to your restricted side programs. You know them primarily as categoricals. That's money that comes to you from the state, flows into your general fund for the most part, but has strings or restrictions related to it. So in this year, that reduction for you will be 2.63%, and targeted categoricals at 15.4%. That will be different for every school district in the state. So depending upon how many of those categoricals you have and what tier they fall into, that number will be different for you. So in that sense, the categorical reduction is not really a level playing field throughout California. For you, you're a suburban district. Suburban districts tend not to have as many categorical programs as, say, LA Unified. LA Unified has every single categorical program ever invented and has them in big dollars. For you, and I've looked just briefly through your information, not as much. So for you, that percentage will be somewhat less. That makes it more difficult in some ways for you because you don't have as much flexibility in that particular element. In any event, looking at it from a statewide perspective, that's about $2 billion or another $300 per student. So all things considered, out of this current year budget, and if you've heard me speak before, you know my comment is, the good news is we're not going to have mid-year cuts this year. Bad news, late-year cuts, because we're beyond mid-year. And so you've got to try to come up with, in this current year, that amount of money basically per child. But it goes on. Remember that this is an 18-month budget, and so in the out year, what we call the budget year, 2009-10, which would start in July 1st of 2009, It will be the second year of a zero COLA year. So one of the ways to think about that is if you look at the statutory COLA, which is computed on a formula, that money more or less rolls over into the budget. Many times school districts receive the COLA as the state receives it as an increase in funding, sometimes less, sometimes more. It just depends. For the current year that we're in now, 8-9, and for next year, zero COLA, we are additionally predicting at least in 9-10, in 10-11, zero COLA as well. So 3 years of zero COLA. And it wouldn't be unlikely that we might have zero COLA in 11-12 as well. But at this particular point, the dartboard, which is a bit of financial information prepared by School Service of California, is calling zero COLA in the current, zero COLA in the budget, and we're predicting that at least zero COLA for 10-11. In the out year also, we have $2.5 billion reduction, about another $400 per student. The revenue limits in that year will be reduced by an additional 1%, and then the categoricals, targeted categoricals, the same ones you have in this year, by 4.5%. So simple math, over 2 years, your categoricals will be reduced by a total of just under 20%, 19.8% over the two-year period. And even for a district like yours that doesn't have all the categoricals, it's still a significant amount of money. It's still a significant deficit to come back from. The hits to the revenue limit themselves, just the hits to the revenue limit, are significant for any district to try to recover from, notwithstanding that the revenue limit reduction in the current year comes so late and that you have to deal with that right now at this point. So, just some additional things related to the budget that are will have impact. They don't get as much ink or as much press as the actual dollar amounts of reductions in revenue limit categorical programs as other things, but they're nonetheless important and generally important to boards, primarily because many of these issues really have impact directly on classrooms and children. And your job is a job of being child-centered and focused. That's what we do. That's why we do these jobs. And so these will have some greater level of impact at that level. One of the things that you will be able to do, if you had categorical carryover, restricted program carryover, you'll be able to use that in an unrestricted way in the current year. And that would be carryover from the 2007-08 school year. And so Ron will be prepared to tell you what that looks like for you. That those ending balances become the beginning balance for 8-9. And that is the so-called, some part of the so-called flexibility within the program. There's three tiers of flexibility. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. For those of you who are interested in facilities, the state backs away from requiring you to deal specifically with things like deferred maintenance and routine restricted maintenance as you have in the past, primarily because they're allowing you not to make the contribution out of your budget that you've made previously, in order to give you some flexibility there. You have to maintain your reserve for economic uncertainty. That's very important to Wendy, of course, and to the county office, and should be very important to you as well. And I would assume you're a 2% reserve district. Is that correct? So you have to understand, in my travels, everybody wants to talk about the reserve. Can we use the reserve? What do we do with the reserve? Well, you have to understand that 2% reserve of your budget is a very, very minimal reserve. Just on the natural, it probably pays for about one half of 1 month's payroll. So it would cover one half of a month of your cash and payroll. That's not going to get you very far. And so in bad financial times, people try to build fund balance and build reserves and conserve cash just for that reason, which brings us to cash. Their major issue in this budget related to cash flow, and sometimes a little bit of a difficult concept for folks to understand Ron and myself, Wendy, what I refer to as the green eye shade people do it every day, but there's a significant difference between cash and budget, and people often get them confused. The budget is that thing that you approve, stack of papers, a lot of numbers. It's a projection of what you think you're going to receive in revenue and how you're going to spend it. Cash is what you actually have in the bank. It's your bread and milk money. It's what you use to pay your bills. It's what you use to pay your staff and do payroll. Because your money doesn't all come to you in one check from the state, your cash fluctuates. Every month it fluctuates. Well, the state has decided that they can no longer, from a cash perspective, afford to send you as much cash in any given month as they were previously. And the reason is because the state has cash flow problems. My God, they're going to borrow $10 billion to try to fix that in the next budget year. And if they have to choose between between them borrowing money on the bond market to facilitate cash flow and you borrowing the money, they're going to choose you. And so there are two new cash deferrals in this deal, one of which crosses fiscal years. Generally, cash deferrals are within the fiscal year. In this particular year, they cross fiscal years. So you have to treat that particular cash deferral, which is about $2 billion, a lot of money. You almost have to treat that particular cash deferral like a cut.
Right.
Because it goes across fiscal years. The big issue, I'm probably spending 70% of my time just on cash in California right now. Everywhere I go, every district is struggling with cash, particularly in the current year. If you can make it throughout this year, and it looks to me as if you can in your district, a sign of pretty good cash management, by the way, then next year will be easier for you because you can size your TRAN or your cash flow instrument appropriately. In this year, so many districts don't even have that option or are running so low on cash that they probably won't make it. We'll have more insolvencies over the next 18 months than we've had in the history of the state. We've only had 7 of those since AB 1200. We'll probably have 7 of them in the next 18 months. Again, a few additional things. Some of these you will recognize. As I said, the state is declining in enrollment, so there's less money for that. Some of these, the grants that you may be familiar with and certifications, all of these things are either eliminated or no longer part of the budget. Of course, mandated costs. You're not going to get any money for mandated costs. Even with the exceptions that are noted there, it's not likely that you're going to see a lot of money in mandated costs at the end of the day. Public Transportation Authority, one of the things, you know, in all of these budgets, when this kind of thing happens, we always shuffle. We always play the shell game within the budget, particularly as it relates to Prop 98. And so one of the things that's being done is that this budget takes money out of public transportation, in effect, revenue out of public transportation, and displaces or supplants those same dollars in 98, which reduces the Prop 98 guarantee in the long term, gets us out of a problem currently, but may not be a great idea. In terms of the categorical programs, and Ron's going to talk about this in detail, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. 3 tiers, and the nature of the tiers is this. Tier 1, you don't have any flexibility, and there's going to be no reduction in any of these programs that you see. And these are the likely suspects that are generally always protected in budgets in the state of California. They tend to be the larger categorical programs, particularly special education, EIA, and K-3 class size reduction. So these are programs that you're going to continue to run, several of them. It's rare in some cases, particularly the larger categorical programs that carry themselves, and I would be surprised if special education, K-3 class size reduction for you, and home to school transportation transportation, if you have it, didn't encroach on your budget already. So you're not going to get more money, but you're going to have to run the program as you have in the past. You have to maintain whatever your maintenance of effort was in these programs previously, you have to maintain in the current and subsequent. Tier 2, these are the programs that over the two-year period will be reduced 19.8%, but even though they're being reduced, you don't have any flexibility to transfer dollars among them. So any money that in each one of these, I don't know how many there are, you can count them there, but in each one of them, you're going to continue to run those programs if you ran them previously. But you're going to receive just about 20% less money than you did in the past. Again, if you have the programs, and you may not have all of these, and one of them significantly that you don't have is FICMAT, because, let's see, that's my program. So, yes, indeed, FICMAT also is being reduced 20%. But you know what? Everybody's struggling, and we understand that concept as well. Tier 3 programs are programs that will also encounter almost 20% reduction, 19.8, and there is a ton of them. And again, I'm not going to go through all of them. There's 3 pages worth of those, and actually, this is as of Tuesday. More programs have been added to this list since then. I never knew that there were so many categorical programs, and I've been in the business for almost 35 years, and there are some on here that I don't even recognize, and so I'm sure there's some that you don't recognize either. You have full flexibility within this group of about 50 or so to transfer dollars in and out for any purpose, along with the carryover that you might have from 2007-08, you can move those dollars into your general fund unrestricted if you want to. You can choose to run or not run the program in Tier 3. So again, some flexibility there. Remember that the early governor's proposal was to provide school districts full flexibility on all restricted programs, including those that are in Tier 1 and Tier 2. That ended up on the cutting room floor, as they say, and so the result, the compromise, in politics always is a compromise. This is the compromise position, that Tier 3, you have some of that flexibility. You no longer have to do your match for deferred maintenance and routine restricted maintenance, and you can use carryover balances from the prior year. These next two slides, honestly, are really not related to you as a district at all, nor are they really related to the state's current budget. But I've included them here to give you a sense of where we are as a state and how we've evolved over the last 10 years. Because much of what I hear as I move around the state, much of what I hear in Sacramento, is that education at some level is villainized as the culprit for the structural deficit that the state now is now suffering. And it's not really correct. Yes, we do have Prop 98. Prop 98, as you know, guarantees education 40% of the budget. But remember that Proposition 98 and school funding is primarily composed of two kinds of taxes. One of them is a very local tax, that's your property tax, and one of them is a state-level tax, basically in sales and income tax, corporate income tax and personal income tax. The majority of your money comes from you locally. And as much of those dollars that make up your revenue limit, where you fall short in terms of property tax, the state adds their share or backfills. So we call that state aid. And so if you look at this chart, you'll see that from 1998 to current year, that the state's general fund revenues increased over that period of time by about 71%. So in revenues, this is the revenue side of the budget, not the expense side. Revenue side of the budget, basically 10-year period, about 71% growth. That's what you probably figure. And in the same period, education, and in this line, I've included both the state aid part, and property tax. So it's both in there. Because I just thought it's all money. And so to be fair, both of the sources are included. So at the same time, education has grown from 35.2 to 55.9, about 59% increase. The other four sectors of the other four large sectors of the state's budget at the same time have increased 91% over that same period of time. Now, some people will argue, yeah, but they don't have the advantage of property tax, which is true. But just on the basis of growth and its draw or the liability that the state realizes relative to education in terms of their portion, not as much growth. So the next obvious question that people always want to ask me is, so where is the growth? And so there it is. You can see the other basically four sectors of the budget. Sweepstakes winner, of course, in business, transportation, and housing at 475%. Corrections, which you would imagine, at 119%. But the argument is that education not necessarily the villain for all of the state's financial woes. Do we play a part in that? Certainly we do, because we're 40% of the state's budget. You can't deny that. But it's a shared responsibility that we all have, and singling out one sector of the budget over another, to me, seems not to make sense. So now everybody wants to know, what do we do? Well, you do a lot of what you're doing tonight. Studying, getting information, having conversations, listening to your community, having your staff do the analysis for you, asking questions about that. In the short term, again, we're saying very clearly, you now have to really think in the future, particularly for growing districts, as you have been in the past, growing in terms of the number of students. Remember that children, in that sense, relative to enrollment, is the revenue generator for the district. So to the extent that you continue to grow, that actually helps you as a district. But now you have to be looking out beyond just the normal, particularly districts that are in a growth pattern or growth sequence have a tendency, in my view, to live year to year. You can no longer have the luxury of doing that. Even if you're growing, you're not going to grow nearly as fast, and you're projecting flat enrollment in the next fiscal year. You're not going to grow faster than your need to make reductions based on the state's budget. The economy is bad, and because the economy is bad, you're not going to earn interest on the money that you have in the county treasury as you have in the past. And I'm sure you've talked about that over time, but again, we always used to think about that as a fairly significant revenue line in any annual budget. That's no longer the case, and likely won't be. Stock market's not looking like it's going to rebound to what it has been in the past anytime soon. And again, I'm not going to read all of these to you. Obviously, you can read them yourself. But there are many things in here. Ron will talk specifically about some of them. I will reemphasize that this is an environment where you simply have to manage cash. Cash can jump up and bite you very, very quickly. Particularly in an investment environment, in a stock market environment like we're experiencing currently, you can be cash healthy and have projected your cash flow positively over the next year, and all of a sudden something happens and you're in trouble. The good news for Capistrano is, number one, you still have growth in students, and you're large, so you have some economy of scale to absorb cash issues more readily. We deal with a lot of school districts that are 1,000 and less ADA. They have no economy of scale. One long-term sub, one placement of a non-public school child in another kind of private placement, an extended litigation that they didn't anticipate, and they're over the edge, just like that. They have no economy of scale. Again, multi-year issue, which I can't overemphasize enough. So what do you do now? Again, in this particular year, you've lost that COLA. You've got to take care of that. Wendy and I spent time this afternoon trying to develop and compute these numbers in the next two bullets for Capistrano, because they will be different numbers for every district in the state, because everyone has different categorical programs. But we think your hit in the current year is about 4.2%. 2.69% of that is in revenue limit. The rest is in your categorical programs. Next year, it's 1.32 and or change, probably 1%, 0.9% of that is in revenue limit. The rest is in categoricals. Remember, that's a 4.5% cut in that year. One of the ways that you have to think about this, however, is that this year's reduction at revenue limit and for that percentage of categoricals is cumulative for you. So you have to. So next year is not just 1.3; it's 1.3 plus the 4.2 that you had in the prior year carries to the next. It's a cumulative amount. Again, we always say, even in good financial times, you have to manage your categorical funds. Unfortunately, and we all know this, the majority of your money in your budget sits, as we say, in the ones, twos, and threes. Those are salaries and benefits, the ones, thousands, the two thousands, and the three thousands. There's likely little chance for you to weather this level of reductions without impacting you or anyone else in the state, frankly, without impacting salaries and benefits, which for you means either that you have to pay the same number of teachers you have now less, or staff, not just teachers, staff less, or pay less people. And that's what it boils down to. I didn't do the math on your numbers. I'm sure Ron knows it by heart. But most districts have 85% of all of their dollars tied up in these three budget lines. And I would assume that you're probably close to that. You are also, I saw this afternoon, one of the things that you can do, it looks to me like you're running at about 96% in terms of your enrollment to ADA. So to the extent that you can increase that percentage over time, and Ron can talk to you more about this in detail, that's a way for you to increase the revenue side. I mean, there's only really two solutions. You either have to increase the revenue side or decrease the expense side. It's pretty simple in that sense. And so anything that you can do, particularly on the revenue side, and increasing your enrollment to ADA is one of those, is a good thing. And that's not to say that 96% or whatever that number is isn't a good percentage looking at it statewide. But there are districts a little bit more difficult for unified districts, a little bit more difficult for any district that has a high school to have a larger number. That's coming from a guy with two high school boys. Elementary districts are often in the 98-99%. Unified districts tend to hover between 96 and 98. But even in a district your size, increasing that 2%, that's significant revenue. So, cash. Again, I can't say enough about cash. It's not an issue for you right now. Your cash flow looks pretty solid to me over the 18 months that's included in this budget. But again, it's something that you have to watch constantly. You can't lose track of cash, because you know your budget can be unbalanced till the cows come home. But when you run out of cash, game over. The state's going to come in and take you over. Let me tell you, the state of California is not good at running school districts. School districts are best run locally, just like this. School board that's elected by the community, people who are providing input. You know best about your community. You know best about your children. You know best about what is a priority for you in this particular community. And when you run out of cash, you lose the ability to have an influence on that. So manage cash, watch cash slowly, because if you run out, it's a problem. We don't get involved in collective bargaining, but I included this slide, and I think it's pretty much common sense of things. There are elements that you can't control that will affect your decision making over the next 2 years and beyond. One of them, of course, is you're not going to get any new money for the next 2 years, the current year plus one at least, and probably for the next three. You're not going to see COLA. And so that is going to make your life more difficult, because it's likely that the CPI continues to increase, and you may have a pressure relative to your salary schedules depending upon how competitive you are in the marketplace for staff. You have to be competitive. And so I've not looked, again, we don't do collective bargaining, and so I've not looked very closely at your where your salaries fit in terms of comparables, but you should do that, and you have to maintain that competitive edge. Your children deserve the best staff at every level, classified and certificated, that you can afford to bring here, and so you have to deal with that. Health benefits, of course, going to continue to rise, notwithstanding the president's comments last night on television. I don't think that's going to happen soon. So in the short term, for most programs, we continue to predict a double-digit increase year over year in the cost of health. And I don't, again, because we don't do collective bargaining, I don't know if you have a cap or what the issue is, and Ron will and his staff will deal with you on that. By the way, this whole issue of the shortened school year didn't materialize. It's not in this. It's not in the deal. You would have had to bargain that locally anyway. All the state would have done was given you the flexibility to have 175 days in terms of, rather than 180. I'll bet you dollars to donuts you're probably already over 180. In this district, so you could theoretically reduce back to 180, but again, that's a negotiations issue for you. Folks at the state level, governor and the legislature decided at the end of the day it was a non-starter for most folks, and so it's not in there. Most everywhere I go, everybody, the question that I get asked is, tell me what to cut. And my response to that is, I have not a clue, because I don't live here. I don't know what your priorities are. I don't know your children. I don't know your community. I can't tell you that something that may be very, very important to me may not be important to you. So I can't tell you what to cut. And Ron didn't ask me, and Wendy didn't ask me, thank God, to come in and tell you what to cut. Because I would have had to say, I don't know. But I can tell you that you've got some distance to make up, and you know that. And Ron's going to be very specific about that in his comments. And I can tell you that reducing budgets here and all over the state is a process, and that it takes a lot of time, and that the decisions that you will finally have to make will be difficult ones. And I can tell you that everywhere around the state, people are looking, comparing themselves to other districts, and you have done that also. Ron's already done a lot of that for you. We're big believers in trend analysis and looking at prior year budgets and trying to project your spending patterns over time and how that looks for you and where money falls out at the end of the year that's unused and as an indication of where you can make reductions. We think also multi-year projections right now. You have to continually update multi-year projections, enrollment projections, which are critical for you. The thing about enrollment, you've been growing over the last almost 5 years, it looks to me like that's as much of the data that I could find. 5 years, you've grown. Your rate of growth, however, over the 5 years, even though you've continued to grow, has declined a little bit on percentage. So now Ron, being the kind of person he is projecting flat for you in the out year. Flat is really decline in this market. As a matter of fact, what we would say is you can't wait till you stop growing in enrollment to consider those impacts on the budget process. You have to start thinking about that when you're still growing, but your rate of growth is declining, and you can see a point in the future where it's going to go flat. And you're probably, if not there, getting close to there. So, again, multi-year projections, cash, stay focused on updating your enrollment projections. Always look closely at your staffing. Make sure you're staffing to the level of your contract. Contracts, you have multiple contracts. And again, as you well know, everything pretty much has to be on the table, at least in the beginning. In the final analysis, you will take some things off the table because, quite simply, not all programs, not all categoricals, not all parts of the budget are created equal for individual districts, and you'll make some decisions about some things that are simply just too important for you to reduce. And then other parts of your budget will be impacted as a result of that. But that's a natural part of the progression and process. That's what you have to do. That's why you're elected. So there it is. It's not a great picture. Not the happiest time in my career going to school districts like yours and having these conversations, but it's, as I said to Ron when I came in this evening, it is what it is. And the best school districts will emerge out of the other end of the tube intact, well-managed. You won't have a tremendous amount of growth in programs over this period of time, but if you're able to stay stable, both in your administration, in your governance, and in the programs that you can run, we will eventually recover. There is recovery out there on the horizon. We actually think that quarter three of 2009, we begin to see statewide some level of recovery. We're seeing indications of that now. We think that things flatten in 2010. 9-10, but with an upswing, probably even an upswing in revenue at the state level over projection in 2010. So some more positive news there, but education will lag behind the state's recovery by at least 18 months just because of the way Prop 98 is calculated and the way we're funded. So we've got to look far out, multi-year issue far out. So I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have if I can. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Trustee Winston.
Thank you. That was a great presentation. I don't envy your job. You did mention that some of the numbers you presented here tonight are basically, I'll take it to the extreme, phony. Not because you're presenting phony numbers, but because the legislature has created a false or phony budget. You explained the expenditure cuts are fairly certain, but that the revenue increases are not. Have you formed an opinion on how much of the revenue increases can be relied on and how much shouldn't be relied on?
What we would say about the revenue side of the budget, you know, and bless them, I think that you can imagine that the work that the legislature did and the governor did in Sacramento was difficult work as well, somewhat like yours. You have at least one person on your dais that knows that firsthand. It's hard work, and I think they did their best to try to consider. But they're simply part of it, as we would say in my business, that, and as you said more eloquently than me, doesn't pass the giggle test. The biggest issue is the lottery securitization. We're going to see in the May ballot, you're going to see five propositions, 1A through E, I think. This budget and much of the revenue in this budget is based on a positive result in those propositions. And I don't know about you, but the last time I tried to predict politics, I was wrong. I'm almost always wrong. And this budget makes a positive prediction relative to those. So right off the top, you've got to look at the $5.7 billion in the lottery securitization and say of the current $42 billion deficit that and the result in terms of the solution, almost six billion may not make it. So that's a big percentage. That's a lot of money.
What about the other issues going up to a vote?
Yeah, the other issues in a similar way, yes. I have not calculated what the impact would be, honestly. But again, I mean, the lottery one is simple because we know what that number is. But I can't help but think folks like school services and other people in Sacramento have the sharp pencil out right now and are doing those calculations. But the likelihood is, I mean, at the end of the day, the final result is the chances are not great that we're going to make the revenue projection that this budget is based on. So the numbers for you, particularly as you look at the out year, could easily increase in terms of the work that you have to do.
That being the case, in providing these handy-dandy recommendations to reduce our budget 4.2% this year and an additional 1.3% next year, are those based on these revenue projections that they are not going to happen? So we need to overshoot these reductions. And that question now is, by how much?
Yeah, and that is the art and science of the process. And I can't give you a specific number, but I can tell you that your assumption is correct.
Is 10% too much, too little?
I don't know. I mean, I would hesitate to say, but I will say this. You have a good county office. Wendy's staff, I know, is working on that information and will continue to do it. But I think the point is you're going to have to overshoot the mark. And you're going to have to do some of that. You're going to have to make part of that decision on faith because no one's going to know. I mean, we're going to be in a similar situation this year that we've been in this year for this, you know, first, what is it, 8 months of the fiscal year, not really knowing what kind of budget we're going to have at the end of the day. And I think you'll find the same thing true. The numbers that you have, the numbers that I've talked about tonight, the numbers that I'm sharing all over the state, are the minimum. Let me say it like this. It's the best case scenario. It's the best case scenario of a bad case. I wish I could be more specific, but I hate to guess and then be wildly wrong. But you will know.
Trustee Bryson?
Several things you mentioned I brought up here, everything being on the table is something I've said for over 6 months. Everything has to be reviewed in the context, as you said so well, of your local district's needs and what the constituents here feel is most important and what we feel is most viable and we're most able to hold on to through the rough water. The other part of everything being on the table is there are no sacred cows in that process, and everyone is going to have to accept being reviewed and looked at. I have great respect for Wendy Bankert, having worked with her through the treasurer's office for a long time, and I know you all are going to be doing the very best you can to give us the best information you can. Of that, we are 100% certain. There was another statement made about the securitization. A few days ago in Sacramento, I reviewed the document and the background on securitization. It has been successful in Florida, numerous other states. It is not 1,000% dark, gloomy, but it certainly, you're wise to warn us, it may not work as well here. You just never know. But in the states where it has been implemented, securitization has worked very well indeed and has met the hopes of those particular states, as I said, Florida being one, for the roll-off of the profit factor there and the added income. However, we have to be very cautious because the surrounding economic factors may even affect the securitization process itself, which can be a threat. So I think from what you're telling us, everything indicates an extreme cautious outlook, extremely cautious, holding on to every dime, watching every bit of cash, and relying on Ron's ability to present to us the best accumulation of facts that he has combined with what you have for our view. And we're getting a lot of input, I understand, Suzette. We had 1,200 more emails with input from our constituents, and those will be reviewed and will be looked at and will be considered in this very serious process, because you said several years out, and all the indicators we see at the Treasurer's Office is equally several years out. So I think you're right on the mark to warn us that we should be looking at 3 to 5 year plans here, not 1 and 2 year surfing, but real hard work for the next number of years. I thank you for your reality. I thank you for having courage to present to us the truth, which is always the best way to manage any difficult circumstance. And I appreciate very much your work, Wendy, also on all of this. I know how hard you do work. Thank you.
Trustee Christensen.
I also like to thank you for your presentation. And since you're familiar with the state as far as being there all the time and understand the situations of how they've developed the budget, I'm hoping that you might be able to answer this question. Because from what I understand, the state budget was developed as keeping the basis of the state the same. I mean, the population, the businesses that are here. However, with the owner's taxes that they've just approved, there is the fear that there's going to be a flight of the producers, the businesses. Other states are already advertising to take them from us. So is it... Was that factored into this budget at all, or, you know, as far as the possibility of the producers actually leaving the state, which would make actually the presentation you gave us a rosy picture?
I don't know if it was or not. I'm not in those conversations, obviously, and not privy to the private conversations between the governor and the Big Four and the legislature, for that matter. But if you look at just our recent history, we already know over the past several years that we have some corporate business flight from California already. We have some loss of population as well, although we're a state of 34 million currently. The projection still is, I've not heard anything different, that we grow to about 50 million by 2030 or somewhere like that. So there is nominal growth. We're not in a, you know, part of the issue that we have in schools is that in any given community, about 17% of the population are school age children. And so that number is, while that number stays consistent relative to the percentage of population, the number in general is still declining. We don't see enrollment recovery or growth, real growth in California, somewhere until about 2015. We think it flattens and then starts to grow a little bit. So, you know, you might want to have a demographer come in and try to answer some of those questions, but clearly, A lot of folks would argue that this is the rosy glow budget, and that there are a lot of factors that will precipitate over the next 5 years that will impact. The one that you bring up is one of them. The one that Mr. Winston brings up is another. There are a handful of them where the projection and the assumption, you know, it's like Ron has to make assumptions in his budget every year when he produces it. Assumptions are just guesses. You know, it's just another word for a guess. Assumptions are almost always wrong. And the assumptions in this budget, most of them are going to be wrong as well. We hope some of them are wrong in the right direction. because you know what? The children are still going to come to school every day. We hope every one of them comes every day. That would help our revenue side. And so you have to leverage what you do know with what you don't know to make sure that you continue to provide the best education possible for them every single day that they arrive. They're still going to come. And so it's a difficult part of budget reductions, and I've been involved in a lot of budget reduction processes over the years. One of the most difficult thing about this process and the work that you will do over the next several months is what you don't know. Because you will have to make a lot of guesses and judgments on your own about what you think is going to happen based on what you know at any given time. But I don't know if they had that conversation. I would assume they must have. But if you look at the history of the state, we're already doing some of that.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also think that, you know, kind of going along with that too, just... You know, it's sort of like Mr. Winston had mentioned, we need to kind of go beyond what we think the problem is going to be, because it could be worse. Even if we have an increase in students next year or remain flat, I think that's going to be a false marker. Because what probably would that be a result of is that the kids that are now in private schools, their families won't be able to afford to take them to private schools anymore. They're going to put them back in the public schools. And I think that increase is just going to be a blip. And where we might have actually gone down if that hadn't happened with this economy. So I think we need to be looking at that also.
Yes. It's a similar phenomenon that we are now already witnessing in community college. Community college enrollments are growing exponentially, and they're capped, by the way, if you don't know that. But there are the enrollment in community college is exponential because a lot of people can't afford to send their children off as they were in the past, at least for those first 2 years. So,
thank you.
Did you have Trustee Winston?
What happens if the May 19th vote is down?
Yeah.
What happens to the state budget? What happens to us, the school district?
I think on May 15th, which is likely a Tuesday, if the propositions don't pass in mass, that the governor calls emergency session for the next day, and that they go back in and start the process all over again. This process that we've just been through for the last 6 months basically starts again. So because even though this is an 18-month budget, it's an 18-month budget based on, as you know, a particular kind of revenues. If those revenues don't meet, they go back in.
I also think on the federal stimulus package where some money would have come to districts, if those propositions don't pass, the state will find a way to capture more of that revenue and release less to local school districts.
So those props don't pass in some significant critical mass. We get out the eraser, and whatever we do over the next month, we start from scratch during the summer.
Well, I don't know if I would characterize it like that. I think you're going to make decisions now based on what you know, and that is going to likely result in budget reductions. So the question becomes not necessarily from a district point of view, not starting all over again, but possibly going further at a state level. They will have to do somewhat of the same thing, that they will use what they have now, particularly on the expense side of the budget, as the baseline, and they'll have to go deeper. And again, they fix it like you would fix it. They reduce expenditures, and in any of remember that it's just not Prop 98 for them. It's the entire state's budget, over $100 billion now. And they go into that budget and try to either reduce expenditures or raise revenue. And hopefully not borrow, because the borrowing is a leverage against future budgets, particularly from the point of view of debt service, that in fact, while it solves the short-term problem, creates another longer-term problem for us to get out from upside down. Remember, we have structural deficit. Eventually, they have to address the structural deficit. Right now, you know, kind of my view, and people may disagree, and that's fine. I'll have our own opinion. The state is somewhat in a position of kind of survival mode, both on the budget and cash perspective. I mean, you know, last month we were sending out registered warrants. We're still sending out registered warrants, by the way, both for tax refunds and for selected interagency payments and for some vendors. The controller has aged payables for some vendors past 90 days. So, you know, I don't think they start all over, but I think they likely have to consider going deeper at all those levels.
If the budget does go down in that election, will that affect the district's cash flow at some point?
Yes. Yeah, because budget...
Do you know when that would be?
I don't. I don't know when that would be exactly, but here's what I would say about that. Ron, this is going to make Ron pale. So if he starts to fade...
He's been really pale lately.
Yeah, I don't think we're done with deferrals. I think that we are now working off of four or five cash deferrals, but the state still has room within the deferral process to flatten out their receipt and disbursement schedule, and they may do that. So if one of the solutions on the cash side could be to defer more cash payments over a longer period of time to local agencies, that's just not schools, by the way, that tends to be counties and cities also. So in that sense, your cash could be affected. I think the best hedge against that is, you guys have Tran run?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Ron in May of this year is going to size a Tran. He's going to bring it to you likely for approval. And what we're recommending to districts is to look at every cash eventuality that you can imagine and size your Tran appropriately. If you don't use it, you maybe earn a little bit of money on it, and you know turn the rest back. But at least you have that option of being able to draw against the Tran, because if you don't have enough money there, you have to go to her or her, and they don't have a lot of cash either. So cash management is critical in managing the Tran. The issue with the Tran, I mean, it seems like everything we talk about, you know, it's kind of, there's a double-edged sword. The problem with the Tran is that the state's credit rating is not great. And at the local level, you're going to have to pay fairly high cost of issue to get the ability to borrow that kind of short-term dry period financing money. It's going to cost you more to borrow, and you're not going to earn as much in interest. You know, in the old days, the cost of issue was fairly low. You made maybe a little bit of money on the float, negative arbitrage, you put it back in your budget, you made some interest. These days, you just don't see that anymore. It doesn't happen. So yeah, cash flows would be affected.
Thank you.
Trustee Bryson?
I was reviewing the immigration pattern projection for the next 5 years. The coming year, the pattern is expected to be 180,000 people leaving the state and over 420,000 non-citizens coming to the state. That will impact our school district.
Yeah.
Positively in the sense that more students, but negatively in the sense that there will be many services that must be provided to those particular, that particular group of students. Is there any way we can get some projected possibilities? Did you say a demographer, so that we could try and get a handle on how many of those 400,000 would end up within our school district and what the probability would be of the impacts on the district?
Yeah, that's outside my area of expertise, quite frankly, but I think in my old district, we had a demographer come in. There are folks around the state. Ron could find them for you. That can provide a sense for you, not only your internal static growth, you know, birth rate, immigration into your county or district, but also immigration from other countries. One of the things that we find right now is that immigration actually is increasing over time. However, not necessarily children. So we have, we tend to have, the tendency in immigration is to, for the country to, and California is no different, have more adults. Those adults, as different than in past decades, don't come with as many children. So that again impacts us as a state.
Ron, could we look into the possibility of having a demographer work with us on these issues if the rest of the board is interested in that? I think it's important and imperative.
Thank you very much for your comments.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for coming
this
evening.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you very much. We will reconvene at 20 after 7. Thank you. Recess. call to order. The meeting's in order. Mr. Libs. Call to order, please. Mr. Lev.
Yes. President Adonisio, members of the board and the public, we'll carry on with the second half of the presentation this evening. But first of all, I would like to take a moment to thank Joel and Wendy for coming. And Joel came down from Northern California. I really appreciate the wisdom that they... The wisdom and experience that they bring to the table and the insight that they have at the state level. And I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment to thank staff, not only within my division, business services, but also personnel and curriculum and instruction. There's a lot of hours of work that went into the background, a lot of conversation. We've begun to do the very difficult work of having conversations, very difficult conversations, as to where we're going to go. And as I begin this evening, the kind of the philosophy or approach I've tried to take here is we have an enormous budget elephant to eat. And the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. And so we've been taking some small bites, and tonight we need to take a rather large bite out of that elephant. And we will keep doing that all the way through June, and we will do it into next year if we end up back here with mid-year cuts again. So it's a process, and this is one of the steps along in the process. What I find interesting is that Joel and I hadn't really talked or swapped information until this morning, and much of what he presented, we were kind of coming from the same direction, and so a little bit of this is redundant, so I won't repeat that much, but I will hit a couple of points here. We do have a budget signed by the governor on February 20th, unprecedented, that we have a budget that was adopted before it was due. I don't think that has ever happened before. It certainly hasn't happened while I've been working in schools. If you take that helicopter 10,000 foot view of our budget, basically the picture is the same. It's still very dire, but they've cut it into different pieces. So while we were moving in a direction, we've had to back up and then readjust how that puzzle looks. As Joel said, we have a budget deal. It's an 18-month, 17, 16-month as we move through time now. But it is predicated on a number of things happening that have yet to come together. And that's the May revision. We will possibly have a May revision, I believe. We have over, I think, 16 and maybe counting budget trailer bills that need to be taken care of, where they do cleanup language. We have a special election. And I'm predicting that we will have mid-year cuts in 9-10 as I sit here tonight. That's what I see in my crystal ball. What we have is an ambiguous future. While we have been waiting and looking forward to at least for the state to quantify what the problem is, we have ambiguous certainty, and I know that's an oxymoron, but all of the house of cards, that so to speak, that the budget has been built upon is very shaky, and so it may come unglued. The May contingencies weaken the budget projections not only for this year, but I believe for the out years as well. And I think if we took a poll and asked everyone in the audience, how many of you think the economy is going to improve within the next 2 years, I mean, show of hands is... I don't think we're going to get many people to raise their hands. And so you couple that with what we're hearing from the state and from Joel, we're probably not looking at an improved economy for, I'm just guessing, 3 to 5 years. It's interesting within this, within the budget that's been adopted by the state, is that there's tax increases. Those are temporary. They roll off in 2 and 3 years from now, in the out years. So that revenue that's being generated automatically rolls out. The flexibility that they're being provided is temporary within the categorical programs. So we can't really treat that as a permanent solution. So we know that in 5 years, we've got to come back and pay up on that. But interestingly, there's a permanent corporate tax cut that kicks in 2011 that will pull up to, over time, $1.5 billion out of the revenue stream at the state. So this was part of the political package and the negotiations that took place. So we have taxes rolling off, corporate taxes cuts coming in. So as you look into the future, the stability of the revenue that the state is projecting is kind of hinged on growth. The federal dollars, as Joel talked about, I think if things get worse, we're not going to see much of that, if any. And that was only for a two-year spread, and we don't know what year that will come, if it does come. So anyway, the little jar of Jell-O there is, our budget's about as solid as Jell-O. Now, as we as staff have taken a look at this, we've taken a very apprehensive approach to this. And early in my working career, I was a carpenter, and we had the adage of measure twice, cut once. And so really, as we approach this budget, we need to measure twice and cut once, because we really only have a small window of where we can cut. We can't go back into the budget and cut when we have 85% of our budget as salaries and benefits and do much cutting and have it be effective if we miss our windows that are coming up here. And that's primarily what I'm trying to do this evening, is help pave the road for where we need to go on our March 9th board meeting. So for certificated, the March 15th deadline, and then May 11th for classified, which backs up from the 45 days from the budget adoption. And it goes without saying, but I will say it anyway, is that negotiated options are not options until they're options. And they only become options once they've been worked through, vetted through the collective bargaining process and approved at the table. So as we're going to look at a sheet of program costs and services costs, and there's a number of those things on that sheet this evening that are negotiable, and we can't count those unless they've been moved through the process. I think one of the problems the state has continued to do, and I think districts do very frequently, is we tend to buy ongoing things with one-time dollars. That is what's kind of come home to roost at this point. And as you look at what the state built their budget on, they're still building it on that concept. They're building it not only on one-time dollars, they're building on borrowing. We can't do that. So we need to remember that one-time solutions that are in this budget, the relief with the categorical flex, et cetera, and even if we get the federal money, it's a one-time issue. As Joel stated, I believe that the budget that's been adopted is our best case scenario. And so we need to prepare ourselves as we move forward that this is as good as it's going to get. Again, the state, I think, has, I don't know how they did it, but they again pulled a rabbit out of their hat, and they have postponed the inevitable of dealing with that whole big structural imbalance that we need to wrestle with. You're familiar with this slide. I've shown this before. I think this is the third time I brought this up. But what I did is I adjusted it for what's happened now that the budget has been adopted. So I know it's going to get a little convoluted with lines and stuff here, but it will make sense if I'm able to explain it well enough. From where we started and adopted our budget in July to where we thought we would be in the January proposal was a loss of about $304 per ADA on our revenue limit. And then we had projected another $137 reduction going into next fiscal year off of that amount, for a total decline in revenue limit in dollars per student of about $440. And here's why we have a budget crisis. It's $1,000 less than what the state statutorily is obligated to pay us. That's why we have our problem. Now, with the adoption of this budget last week, these are estimates, but this is where we've ended up. So instead of a $304 loss on per revenue limit, we're losing about $191. Then next year, another $52. Now you'd say, well, that's great, but remember what they were doing in the proposed budget in January was we could go move all of those categorical dollars, just completely move them in without any restrictions. So instead of now pulling everything out of revenue limit, they're going to pull dollars out of the categorical programs before we can even go touch them. So the total cumulative loss is about 13.94% on the revenue limit there. But what's interesting, if you add those numbers up, it's the same cut. So here we are. It's the same picture, just with different pieces that make it up. So one of the frustrating things, and Joel had mentioned this, is that the actual details of how this is all going to work are still being worked through the system. We are trying to get answers on things. I know Philippa and Cindy Brown had both asked school services and CDE a couple of questions, and the one regarding class size reduction, they were unable to answer. So we don't know how some of this is going to really hit the ground when it finally hits the ground running. Not to belabor this, but within the categorical flexibility, there's three tiers, as Joel talked about. There's tier one, no cut, no flex, and then you move to tier two, where you have a 15.4% cut this year, another 4.5% cut next year with no flex, and then in the tier three, then you have the cuts plus the full flex. That's a significant amount of revenue they're pulling off of those programs, even within the mid-year, because things have been budgeted, and we were trying to capture as much of whatever was left in those programs as possible. The flexibility is allowed through 11 through 12, 13, which is when it rolls off in 5 years. In order to take advantage of that, we do have to have public hearings, and so we have to have a process whereby we bring that to the board. We talk about the impacts, and then the board needs to take action in order for us to be able to take advantage of that. We're preparing for that, and we've talked about that before. Within that flexibility is the 08-09 and 09-10 requirement for instructional materials adoptions have been suspended, so that's, it postpones it. We still have to do it, but it postpones it. The deferred maintenance match, we're able to capture some money there. That's helpful. That's about $2 million to us. Routine restricted maintenance, we can reduce our contribution of 3% of total general fund expenditures down to 1%. But as we've talked before, the problem is our routine restricted maintenance is encroaching into our general fund anyway. So we have some adjustments, some programmatic and structural things to do to try to adjust that and get that down. They did not give it. I would not term what is being provided in class size reduction as flexibility. They have not changed the rules of the program. They have relaxed the penalties for going over. And that's what we're trying to get clarification on. The school year remains at 180 days. And so I have Gumby and Pokey there to kind of signify is that the flexibility that we thought was going to be very robust is more like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and we're just kind of pushing it over. This is simply in here to give you an idea of those categorical programs that we're looking at to pull flexibility out of and the amount. And what all of this is to say is that we're going to pull money out of site level, as well as the district level, and when we take or capture that, we believe we have about $9.5 million. That's a significant amount of money that helps us get through this year. And I believe we've discussed this particular slide before. Okay, so here we are as we move in to the numbers and what I'll call numbers on a napkin. And it always gives me pause to think I'm trying to explain a $500 million budget in two slides. But that's what I'm going to try to do. The column there in the middle, or on the left, is what the January proposal was. The column on the right is where it was adopted, as what was adopted last week. So where we thought we had categorical flexibility of almost $15 million, now what we think is we've got about 9.5. We've been doing cost containment measures, which involved looking at encumbrances, bringing those amounts down, taking a look at expenditures, and really triple checking all of those along the way to make sure that we're defending and everything that need defending each expenditure that it absolutely needs to take place. Painful, but necessary to maintain the cash flow, as Joel talked about. So we think we can pull out of the budget about 10.5. Coupled with the revenue limit reductions of about 10, and then the reduction of the categorical flex there for 0.5, we have a margin in our budget of about $100,000. Now, I mean, anywhere close to $500,000, I think, would be good for us. What this does is illustrate is that we haven't changed much from where we were. It's just the components are different. As I stated before, I think we can squeak through this year, and I believe Wendy's looked at our figures as well and concurs with that. We're very fortunate that we were able to do that. I have deferred maintenance with a question. We're still trying to get clarification on exactly how that's going to work, which may mean the ability to pull $2 million into the budget or not. We're still waiting for the regulations to come out on that. So there's unanswered questions. Now, you notice we have an abacus that we had to use to calculate this year. Next year, we had to go get a slide rule because it was so complicated. And, you know, I remember my father actually using a slide rule in his line of work. Interesting how far we progressed. Really what I'd like to do is kind of concentrate on that right-hand column of where we've been, where the budget was adopted. And in order to give you a clear picture of the target number we're heading for, we did not include any flexibility in that right-hand column as we had done before, because that's really a decision at this point of what the board wants to end up cutting or capturing or using. And so that's the work we're going to be doing over the next several weeks or next couple of months. I did not count the federal relief dollars there. But what we think we're supposed to get, if that's a way to state it, is if we get what we think we're supposed to get, we get about $2.1 million in Title I and about $9.3 million in IDEA special education dollars. But do we count that at this juncture? I don't think so. And if it comes in, great. That will really help. Going on, we believe we have about $12.3 million in revenue limit reductions from where we were or where we are. Another 3.9 in categorical reductions, meaning we need to come up with about $16.2 million to cover that hole. We have cost increases that we talked about before, health and welfare benefit increase, step and column increases over the current year budget, adding additional grade at San Juan Hills High School, other costs and things that tend to go up have been budgeted in. So there's about $10.8 million on there as well, bringing the total up to $27 million. And if we take out the $2 million flexibility for deferred maintenance, and we've talked about there's a cost to that because now we're not maintaining the facilities as much, the number we have to hit, which is $25 million. That's what we have to come up with. That amount of money needs to be in ongoing money if we don't want to come back and revisit this problem again next year or the year after. Is that it needs to match up ongoing cuts. And then additional needed in 10-11, if no changes are made, no adjustments are made, no reductions are made, we probably need to come up with somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million in additional cuts the following year. Now, what you do need to know is we have not projected any enrollment increase. We believe we will get some enrollment increase, but at this juncture, we didn't want to put that in until we had time to triple check it. And we think a couple of things are happening. I think, Mr. Christensen, you mentioned this, is that the private school issue is that some kids are coming back from private school. And another one I think we see happening is that people coming back to live at home with mom and dad and bringing kids back into the community, that things aren't going well, and so they're you know, trying to cut people are trying to cut down as well. So that's what we kind of have a feeling for at this point, that this can all change. This slide is not complete, and we are not able to really tell you definitively if there's going to be any savings in the elimination of K-3 CSR, but what the figures you have there are is that in order to maintain it, it takes an additional 217 teachers over what you would have if you had 31 kids in each of those classrooms, and then you would need 95 kids or 95 additional teachers if you went to 25-1. We literally are waiting to hear back from school services and the Department of Education on how we're supposed to go about calculating this. They don't know. So what we thought was this flexibility process, even what was written, they can't interpret this. The CDE has not interpreted it yet.
So the calculation that was on the school services site is not the one that's going to be implemented?
We don't know. What we thought was going to happen was that if, and I'll use the example of going to 25-1, just as an example, that we would get, or let's go to 26, because if you were go over 26, you were going to take a 30% reduction on your CSR revenue. So we would get our CSR revenue, which is a little over $1,000, is it $1,000? $1,071 per student for over and above your standard revenue limit. So you would get that for each of those 20 students, then you'd be penalized 30%. Then for every, then if you went over in that class, you'd only get standard revenue limit on those students. But
on the marginal students.
Yes, on the marginal students. But where the clarification problem comes in is you have to roll it off the same way you rolled it in. So you have to back off third grade, then kindergarten, then first and second. And we said, well, what if we roll off on third? Can we go to kinder, first, and second? They can't answer that. They don't know.
Okay.
So we don't know if we can just do third grade, and if you then go to first and second, whether you lose all of your funding. In addition, and this is something that I think is we've touched on briefly, is that we also have some facilities issues that kind of complicate this problem for next year. Is that if we maintain class sizes where they are, we're going to have to add relocatables and move some classrooms around to house students at various sites. And I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 relocatables we're going to have to bring in order to house the students at that level. So there's other things that come into play.
Like for CSR to continue?
Yes.
All right.
We believe the program requirements from the state remain, but the penalties have been softened. We're trying to get clarification. As we talked at our last budget meeting, we kind of presented the idea that we have to think differently, and I think Joel echoed that from a little bit different perspective, is that we can't continue to do what we've been doing the way we're doing it. We have to come up with a different way. And we presented this idea of taking a look at what's in our core. We're to the point where cutting and trimming is going to affect what's in the core, and then we talked about truly what is at the very, very center of what we're required to do, and that's what is in the white box. So this is why what we have to do ahead of us is going to be very difficult, is we have to analyze each of these programs within that circle and determine how we're going to reduce those services, period. End of sentence. So here we are in the process of responding to cuts. Just to kind of walk us through where we've been, is over the past 2 months, three sessions, including this session, we've talked about why we need the cuts. We've now been able to quantify them to the large degree. Had discussions with the board as to why that's happened and where we need to go. The second phase in that process is what cuts will need to be made. That's what we're embarking upon this evening. That's where the first big decision process starts at the next meeting on March 9th. So we're in the middle of that now. That will, I believe, will continue through June as we continue to try to take a bite out of this process and come up with a plan to make up that $25 million. It's important to keep in mind we can't just go cut people. We have to cut program and services. And then if people are if services and programs are cut, then if people are involved and impacted by that, then they fall out of that process by way of the RIF notices and then bumping rights, which goes to job classification, seniority, etc. But what we need to do is preserve our windows for those over the next couple of weeks. So here's our staff's recommendations to the board on the next two slides, is that we're going to continue to have our an evaluation of what's in the core, what level of services we need to provide, and I assure you that this is a painful, difficult process as we work through these things at the cabinet level. We need to prepare for the loss of the categorical dollars, that 15 plus 5, almost 20, 19% cut over the next 2 years. We need to maximize all available categorical flexibility, I believe, not only for cash flow, but to help minimize the impact to the programs that we need to end up cutting, whether that be CSR, deferred maintenance, routine restricted, or other categorical programs as we look at those. I believe we need to take a hard look and reevaluate our management structure. Take a look at how our organization is put together. We need to wrap up negotiations for 08-09 with all of our bargaining units and then embark immediately, in my opinion, in the negotiations process for 9-10 so that we can include them in this solution process as part of the team. What I think we are, I've used this analogy with a number of people within staff, is that schools have kind of ended up like the wagon train moving across the plains. You know, you loaded it up, and now we're moving across the plains. And as we've moved along, we've tended to add things into that wagon. And even if they don't cost, we've still added them into the wagon. And so we have strained our animals. We've strained that pulling power. And it's while we're able to make progress and move, it's been slow, it's been sure, it's been steady. But what I think we're being asked to do in this process is we need to shift out of wagon train mentality, and we need to become a bullet train. We need to become efficient. We need to become lean. We need to become sleek as we move forward, because we're going to have to keep wrestling with this issue, as we've talked about, over the next several years. So it's kind of like, do you rip the Band-Aid off all at once, or do you want to just tear it off in little pieces? What this flexibility process with the categorical programs helps, and what the federal dollars, if we do get that, helps, is it helps us kind of cushion that blow. It gives us some buying time as we try to move through this. Although we can't count on it, if it comes in, it helps soften that process. So I think at the end of 5 years, when this flexibility rolls off, we need to be that bullet train ready to hit the tracks. Now, this next slide is probably the most difficult slide I've had to put together in my career. But this is what we're recommending sitting here this evening regarding layoff notices for March 9th. What we've tried to do is protect flexibility to the best of our ability while not going too far. We want to find a balance of between going too far and not going far enough. And so what we've done in compiling this list is tried to put together what we believe will provide the board with the maximum flexibility that will be needed as we go through and try to carve out $25 million out of our budget. I don't necessarily want to read those, but they're all on there, and you can read through those. We've taken a look at the categorical programs, realizing that categorical dollars may be shifted or changed, and so there's a line in there that says positions funded by categoricals and grants not included above. So we need to make sure over the next couple of days, as we move toward the board meeting next week, that we've analyzed those to make sure we've included those as well, because we don't know where this whole thing is going to land. And we're at this because, 85% of our budget is people. You know what, let me go on to the next one. Our budget timeline, where we go from here on the next slide. March 9th, we're looking at approving our second interim report, approved program and services cuts through the resolution for the reduction in force notices. If we need to do classified layoffs at all, that will come in May. So we're just stepping through this one bite at a time. I believe we're going to need at least one more, if not two more, study sessions. We need the opportunity to work through these things with the board as we go forward. So March, April, we'll probably be adding a budget, not only budget, but facilities, because these things tie together to a certain degree. And then you can see the rest of the dates as we move through on out into June. Given that we know that we have a budget, I mean, it's completely within our ability to adopt a budget early if we can get to that point. But we'll probably want to look, with everything we have to do, it'll probably take us at least until May, towards the first part of June. But right now we're planning on that last meeting in June to our budget hearing and adoption. Before I kind of skip through the conclusion, what I would draw your attention to is this 11 by 17 handout, and this is an expanded version of what we had before. And what I would like to do is make sure that I reiterate again that this is not a proposed cut list. This is not a proposed cut list. What this is the costing out of selected programs and services. Many of these were questions asked specifically by the board. What does it cost to run this program? What does it cost to provide that service? And so what we've done, now our cut list will probably be derived off of things that are on this, but at this point we're not proposing any specific cuts. We will begin formulating that and bringing those to the board over the next several meetings. Now, you'll also notice that on this list there's a number of negotiable items. Those would have to be saved for the bargaining table, but it answers the questions that the board has been asking. It was painful to even come up with this list, because putting it on there means we're making our programs vulnerable to the possibility that they would be affected by this. There's the other handout that you have is a look year 08-09 and 09-10 of what our balances are in our categorical programs, which would be available to capture for flexibility. And Philippa had begun doing this last week before the budget was adopted, so what we need to do is go back and update it for the final cut figures. We didn't, the cut figures went up a little bit, the percentages went up or switched, so we need to make those adjustments, but it does give you an idea of where we are pretty close. The other handout that you have is simply some information from school services that really in three pages kind of gives you all of those tiered categorical programs, as well as explains just some highlights in the budget. So that's why I provided that to you as well. So in conclusion, now you've heard it probably 8 or 9 times, this is a multi-year problem. And I have permanent in quotes because I think that's the way we need to treat this, that these reductions are permanent, although they may change. The response that we come up with, I think, needs to match that. And then, as we talked before, the nature of school business has changed. We have a new normal. And on our online suggestion box, I believe the number was 1,366. Is that right? 1,366 suggestions have come in, so I was thinking they were going to trickle in a little bit faster. And I know those have been presented to the board, and the board has been reviewing some of those. And so the community, if they wanted to, they can find that on our website, and I believe that link there on the board, on this, in within the spread, excuse me, within the presentation is still good. I would be happy to entertain any comments. Again, we can do this. We will get through it, as painful as it is. And on the last page there, I've included some resources and links to get to those right out of this presentation. All of this information will be posted to the website first thing in the morning. And these handouts will be there as well. So with that, I would be happy to open this up to any questions you might have.
Trustee Palazzo?
The figure cutbacks for 208-209, we have not voted on them. You have presented to us. When do we vote on that, or what is the procedure on that?
That's a very good question, and we will be bringing that back to you very shortly. As what we've tried to do is hold tight on all those expenditures, and then we'll bring that to you. I think we have to bring that to you in a resolution process.
When does it have to be done by?
It would have to be done by the end of the year, I believe. Is that correct?
I think it's September.
By September? Okay.
For the two...
current fiscal year?
For the mid-year cuts, you're going to cut and then we'll approve it after it's done?
Yeah, okay. Let's just say we'll have that to you by end of this fiscal year.
Are you cutting right now what you have proposed?
We
in other words,
yes.
You know, if you have proposed to cut the classroom supplies, we haven't voted on that, but you have already cut it.
What we have done is we have restricted the purchase of those items. We have not physically gone in and cut the budget and moved funds out of those budget line items into the general fund. We have frozen expenditures for the most part. Now, if things need to take place, they can still work their way through the system. So if someone needs paper or pencils or pens, those things still can be provided.
But
in essence, we have turned off the faucet. And we believe we presented that information along the way, and we believe that was necessary in order to preserve our cash flow.
So those reductions were made without...
That's
all right. But I have a different question. Can I move on?
Yes.
There's a notation here, the enacted budget code, current year school district revenue by 2.63%. There's some significance to the amount being greater than 2%. Is that correct? We get some relief legislatively with the Ed Code with an amount that's greater than 2% reduction in revenue?
Can you give me another clue? Are we talking about layoff notices? I don't know where you're... If you could help me with your...
That's what I'm asking.
If revenues don't grow by greater than 2%, then there are some other issues that take place. But if the revenues are certainly zero and less than zero, so it's the negative 2.63 has no consequence
from
perspective.
Thank you. We did have comments. We are recessing to closed session. We do have comments. If I could call on Mr. Patrick Harris. Thank you, Mr. Lips.
I was going to say good evening, but it's not. My name is Patrick Harris, and I'm from Dana Point, and I work at San Clemente High School as a counselor, so I'm one of those up there to be cut. My purpose of speaking here for the few moments is to just be clear, a little clear on what we do that's measurable. Because a lot of people have an idea that counselors are kind of touchy-feely people and we, you know, treat kids who are anxious or depressed or something like that. And besides that, we do and we have been forming teams that are doing measurable differences. So when we came in, we were hired under the 1802 legislation 3 years ago in 2006. And we began working with academic advisors, the pre-existing counselors, administration, teachers, and community organizations to build programs that we could say were measurable, because we know that to justify our jobs, we have to show you that, hey, we're saving some money here. We're actually saving kids who would normally drop out of school and save you money. So we created a vision. It's a three-pronged vision. One is to raise the exit exam scores, how many kids were passing it sooner, to get those kids passing it in 10th grade faster, to get more A through G students are qualified to meet the A through G requirements and going off to college, and third, to retain more students in high school and stop the dropout rate. The first thing that we did was we began to increase the knowledge of the high school exit exam by working with administrators and academic advisors. We've been using pre- and post-test measurements, and we've seen an increase in the knowledge of sophomores compared to 2 years ago in regards to the importance of the CASI and what's being tested. Already, we have gone up from what started out about 87%, anywhere from 87 to 92% passage, up to 92 to 96% passage on the first time that these students now take the CASI. The second thing we began to do was to work on the A through G requisites and raising that. To do that, we had to take on caseloads and work with the most at-risk students. And that required each of us to take on about 150 to 200 at-risk students, particularly. These were students who were in danger of not graduating, behind in credits over a semester, not passing the CASI. By administering pre- and post-tests to sophomores and senior classes over the past 2 years, we've seen an increase in knowledge regarding what the A through G requirements are. At San Clemente High School, this is just something that just came in this past week from the colleges. It's typical of the total population of students who attend college, and at San Clemente High School, that's about 82% out of our graduating class. 40% used to attend a four-year university, and 60% attended two-year colleges. Right now, that number is closing. We have 53% who are attending the two-year colleges, and 47% now who are attending four-year universities. The A through Gs are meeting more readily, and they're going off to college sooner. The last thing, and perhaps the most important, is that we're retaining students at a higher rate. At San Clemente High School, again, we were hovering around 84% retention rate from freshman to senior year. This year, we're expecting at least 88 to 90% retention rate from our seniors, and that's due to a number of different factors that we've implemented with the administration and such.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Okay, thank you.
And then one more, Mr. Bogatis. I think I might have hit your name. Tom, is that, you'll have to correct me on your pronunciation.
Bogatis, thank you.
Bogatis.
Thank you. It's Bogatsis. Thanks. I just want to follow up with my colleague, Patrick Harris. He gave the high school perspective and the counselors in general in terms of what we do. I wanted to focus in on the middle school counselors for a little bit. On behalf of all the middle school counselors, I would like to stress to you the impact that school counselors have made on student success and achievement. Interventions that increase the graduation rate and decrease the dropout rate begin at the middle school level. There have been close to 1,000 academic review meetings held district-wide in middle schools with students and parents to discuss academic progress, review test results, address attendance issues, review student transcripts, and most importantly, put an academic intervention plan in place for each student. These meetings are held when students score in the far below basic and below basic ranges of the STAR exam, which means they are not on pace to pass the California High School Exit Exam, which is a requirement to graduate high school. School counselors work closely with teachers, administrators, and other support staff to increase test scores. As an example, at one of our middle schools, 40 out of 79 seventh grade students, 50% with low scores in the STAR exam, increased their scores to out of the academic intervention level. Another school had a 44% increase. There was another school with 23 out of 46 students, eighth grade students, who had increases in their STAR scores to out of the intervention level. Counselors use data to show increases in student effort, achievement, attendance, and a decrease in office referrals. Our counseling program is comprehensive in nature, which means it serves all students on campus, not only the students who are struggling academically. We address the needs of all students in the following ways. We do classroom lessons with PowerPoint presentations to increase student awareness about the California High School Exit Exam, the importance of STAR tests, grades, high school requirements, and A through G requirements. We hold information nights for parents. 3, letters mailed to parents to explain how school counselors promote and enhance the learning process. 4, career development lessons to make the connection between school and the world of work. 5, students and parents know who we are, what we do, and how we assist in their child's educational program. And lastly, participation in parent conferences, student study teams, 504 meetings, IEP meetings, and retention watch conferences. Our program is also proactive in addressing the need for school safety. We are school leaders during a crisis, and we work to keep our campuses safe. We have a planned, results-based school guidance system, which is aligned with the goals of the district and the California Standards for School Counseling. Our goal as counselors is to promote and enhance learning and to address the needs of all students in the Capistrano Unified School District. I have handouts if you request additional information regarding the academic review meetings and one required annual report, which is submitted to the district and to the California Department of Education.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming forward. We are now recessed to closed session to discuss the items A through F as indicated on the agenda. Thank you very much.